Yes, your eyes do not deceive you. This is the photo show. I'm Ewan Rankin. I'm actually delivering a show about the very discipline that I make a living from, photography. I'm a pro photographer in Birmingham. I do loads of work for loads of people, mostly industrial, I have to say. I don't do anything like weddings or any of that kind of crap. So if you want to know anything about photography, you can write in, you can answer questions. What we're going to do in this podcast is pick up where we left off about a year ago, probably, maybe 8 months or so. The photo show is about three basic things. We're going to take you through the news, we're going to take you through the gear that's available, and then we're going to take you through some question answers of your questions. If you've got questions for us, then you can send them to us at britishtechnetwork@gmail.com and just mark it the photo show question or something like that. As long as the photo show's in there, we'll find them each month and we'll answer them or do our best. We'll do our very best. We've got a couple today that we've had a couple of, I've had to have a bit of a rummage around, a bit of research. Where's the show been? Well, the show's been disappeared for a while because I've had loads and loads of work, unfortunately, or fortunately. But it takes about half a day or so to prep. So I started prepping this morning at 6 a.m. and I've had a couple of breaks while I tried to buy an iPhone. But I've pretty much been prepping it up until about 20 minutes ago, so, and then I went for a shower. So it takes a while, is all I'm saying, so please be patient with me. I don't know if we're going to do this weekly anymore, but I certainly think we're going to go for at least monthly. If we could do fortnightly, that kind of stuff, then that'd be great. We've had a few reviews, and I've got to say, considering I haven't done a show for so long, they're actually very complimentary reviews and 5 stars. Thanks very much. One from Petrolhead. I love this show, but where's it gone? For a couple of years, both Ewan and guests would argue over the benefits of this and that, which was very entertaining and informative. The guest seems to disappear. Well, that's because of the fact the times changed and I couldn't keep a regular time and people couldn't come on and that kind of stuff. And the host carried on, but then stopped the last show in October 2013. Jesus, was it that long ago? I'm sorry. With promises of return. Shame it's gone as photography is the subject that the host specialises in. Well, it's going to come back. I did say it was going to come back and it's taken me a while, but I am here. I'll try and do it monthly, like I said, at the very least. Craig has also written in, great podcast, but seems to have died a death. And Photo K says, truly great podcast, informal, informative, and skilled with non-US-centric stuff. Ewan brings the right amount of informed criticism and honesty to the reviews. It's just great. All 5-star reviews. Thanks ever so much to the people that left those. If you've got a review for us, then obviously you can't review a series of these podcasts because there hasn't been any yet. But I promise you this is going up this week and we'll do our very best to keep it going and going and going. Stick with us. And please give us reviews because that does no end of good for our ratings. And one from Jay Dizzle. Occasionally the best semi-regular photo podcast around. They've transcended regular scheduling to adopt a more Lazarus-esque approach. Surprise, we're back program schedule. It does, however, beat the stuffing out of the constant rehash of all the same old stuff from other podcasts and shows. Thanks very much, matey. Do appreciate that. As I say, give us a review and we'll be in. So let's kick it off then, straight away. It's time for the news. Well, unless you've been under a rock, the iPhone 6 came out the other night. We did a lovely show. Lots of nice comments about that. Thank you very much to those people that have bothered to write in. The iPhone was bigger and better than ever, allegedly. They've gone for a massive screen. What has it got for photography? I don't want to go on about it too much because we've got it on the Mac show coming up. But allegedly, it's given an awful lot more for photographers. There's no increase in the sensor size, so you're not getting up to the kind of ludicrous 34 megapixel output that you can get from the Nokia 1020. And it's got a long way to go to do justice to the images that come out of that phone. But they did promise that there was better processing through the sensor, and also there was optical stabilization in the 6 Plus. I've gone for the 6 Plus because it was absolutely gorgeous, and the video was what really attracted me. I can see me sticking this on a brushless gimbal and sticking it on the end of a boom for work. But certainly, the photography would be interesting. I'm going to take some side-to-side comparisons when it comes next week with the 1020 and see what I really think of it. I've got reservations that it's going to beat the 1020 because that is a fantastic camera, but it's going to be light and small and thin, and I've got to say it could replace my iPad Air. I don't know. I'll have a look at it. 1920 by 1080 screen, superb. What are the big things that you're going to be looking for? Well, thinness is the start. From a photography viewpoint, if you bothered to notice, The keynote, there's a very interesting thing that they did with the lighting. They've lit it just very slightly off center from one side, but close to center, because what that does is give it a rounder appearance, which makes it look thinner. And if you look at the iPhone 5, they've lit that with very natural light all around so that it gives it a much more wider look. So a bit of jiggery pokery there to make it look a lot thinner, but it isn't a lot thinner, not much at all. And one of the things that's kind of nasty about it is you can just see here on this image, they've managed to leave the camera outstanding in this little pod, and a lot of people have agreed with me on this. If you look at my Nokia 1020, let's just go back to me, here we go, my 1020 actually sticks out a fair old bit on the back because it's got a lot of moving parts in the camera for the image stabilization, and it works wonders. I mean, there's been a point on Twitter about, is optical image stabilization of any use on a smartphone with a lens of only one focal length? Well, I've shot video with this, and you can hear it working as you're moving it around. And I say the results have been absolutely superb. And it stabilizes really well in Final Cut Pro in the post, so post-production. So I think that's an absolute positive. I'd like to see more of that. As to why they've done this, I have absolutely no idea, because why not just give a slightly thicker? They've gone for this MO of making thinness, and I've always said I think that's pretty crap, and it is. Why not just have the camera better protected, maybe even fractionally recessed to protect the lens, and then with that extra space that you've got, give us something else. Give us a little bit more battery. Give us a little bit more in the radios or something like that. I find that pretty slim. Not particularly enjoyable. Screen resolution, they've gone to Retina HD, which I'm sure was predictable at some point. A 1920 by 1080 screen on the 6 Plus, that's what interests me. If I can sit and watch a movie or a TV show on the way down to London on the train in this, instead of having to take my iPad or my MacBook Air, that might be appealing to me. I've got to say, I've bought one on the basis that I may well be taking it back next week. But it looked pretty good. Loads and loads of extra architecture, but not bad at all. Now, photo and video, that's what we're here for. There's the pixels. They've got larger pixels that are closer packed. So larger pixels mean it's absorbing more light more easily. You get better quality images from large sensors. And also then they've got this 2.2 aperture, which is great for your depth of field if you get a choice on that. They talked about with the video, they've got this ability to come in and out very easily and return focus on items. And that looked very, very good. Big thing on the video for me, photography, I don't think they've done a lot extra to it. I don't think you're going to see an enormous benefit. But with the video, I think what you're going to see is pretty cool. You've gone, you're kind of hitting the GoPro specs a lot more now here. So GoPro does 1080 at 60 frames per second, but it's that kind of bubble wrap that even with the plugins, you can never really straighten it properly. With this, you're going to see something that's an awful lot flatter, an awful lot better, I think, on the video. And it does 1080p at 60 frames a second. That's phenomenal. There's no DSLRs out there that are doing that that easily. My 6D shoots a fantastic image, but I'd love 60 frames a second out of it. File size is not the issue to me. I want the quality that I get from that and the ability to slow it down. So that's superb. Our slow-mo's gone from 120 at 720p up to 240 frames a second. Now that's really, really good. At 720, that's excellent. That's keeping pace again with what's going on in the GoPro. But again, you've got the better image, I think, to start with, something that will process far easier and straighten far easier. Dead impressed in the keynote with what I saw on it. But I'm going to have to pause here because I've got... Hello, mate. I'm all right. Timing's everything, mate. I'm smack in the middle of a photo show. I'm actually doing one. What can I do for you? Are you your chit-chat? All right, mate. Cheers. Bye. Where was I? Yeah, so interesting thing was the video. They pulled a bit of jiggery pokery there. I got a couple of emails from people saying, why did you have to slag off the images? The images look great. I didn't slag them off. The images were fantastic. And I don't doubt that they were taken on an iPhone. The difference is that they were in fantastic light in great valleys that are in the middle of California. The sun there is brighter than it could ever be. And there was probably 8 reflectors down there lighting up the subject so that you could get the balance between the background and the foreground. There was probably even some lighting rigs there delivering static lighting. So, let's not be silly. Those were great images, but they were great images professionally taken, probably with a crew right there as well in the background behind the photographer. Very, very good, though. Very, very good quality. Liked it an awful lot. We'll be very happy to try and test it. But I think the video is the big leap forwards. I wrote a piece this week about why the iPhone is no longer the benchmark in smartphones. And I've had a few people agree with some of the sentiments that I put in it. And as Lee Garrett said today, he didn't agree with the title. That's okay. That's fine. But one of the things that has happened today is a guy named, and let me go back to what I've got here on my notes, Blair Bunting, who's a professional photographer. He's written a lot of stuff saying, you know, the iPhone is a good camera and it's a great cell phone camera, but it's not a great camera. It's the Polaroid of our generation. And I think he's making a really good point there. I think that's definitely where it's coming from. Now the question then would be, is this a really good camera? Yeah, it is. Is it a great camera? It's not bad at all. I mean, I can take pictures on that I can use commercially quite happily, and that would fill a wall. So, you know, that's the test. If I can sell images, that makes it a pro camera as far as I'm concerned. You know, it's the Forrest Gump kind of test. It is what it is. But good stuff. Well done, Apple. I've ordered one. I'll wait and see what it's like. I will give you an honest review when it comes back. If I'm nothing else, I am honest about Apple. You know it. Now then, if you were sitting down watching the keynote and you saw the background image that was on the phone, you thought, wow, that's a great image. Well, it was. It was taken by Espen Hagensen, and he got a real shock, the same as the rest of us, when the iPhone was launched, because that was one of his images. It was gracing the background of the Apple device when it was shown up, but it was a total shock to him. He didn't realise until one of his friends rang him up and said, oi, oi, turn the TV on, quick. Apple had acquired the licence to use the image, but he had no idea what it was going to be used for. And the image has been changed. You can see there is little log cabin in the middle, which you've got to say you'd crap yourself if you lived there, wouldn't you, from avalanches. But it's been stripped back so that it's less intrusive, if you like, a little bit more bland, because you've got a lot of text showing up over there, so that the house would probably just be a little bit a bit difficult to see through. Well done to him, but utter and total shock. I'm sure it's going to do him no harm at all, though. Work should be flooding through the door. I've got a nice picture of a cat if you want it, Tim. Yeah? No? Okay, fine. This is Zilla van den Born. She's a Dutch girl who decided to fake a 5-week holiday to East Asia. So she went to great lengths. She completely staged the whole thing. She never actually left her native Amsterdam in the whole process. Even these pictures here of her dipping in the sea in the middle of East Asia were not in East Asia. They were actually in the pool in the apartment complex where she lives, and a clever bit of Photoshop. Everything you can see there in the background with the fish, all Photoshop. All the shimmering on the top that looks like it's the ripples in the ocean, all Photoshop. Absolutely everything. The seafloor bed, all Photoshop. They were shot in a swimming pool in her back garden, effectively. She went to enormously elaborate lengths. So she did loads and loads of special lighting. She went to special places and set up the shots with permission. She remodeled her bedroom completely to make it look like an East Asian hotel so that she could Skype back to her friends and family and say, I'm having a lovely time. And she basically lied to all of her friends and family. She went for sunbeds on a daily basis. And she's also shot a number of short videos that are really showing quite a lot of skill in video production and tomfoolery. Why has she done it, might you ask? Well, she's had lots of fun in the process, and she's pissed off her family. There's actually a video of her family's reactions when she comes clean with it all, which is pretty cool. But she wanted to get a great mark from a college tutor for an assignment. She wanted to show how easy it was to create a fake existence and persona on social media. I've got to say, job done, girl. Well done. Here's her in a Buddhist temple in East Asia that actually wasn't. It was in the middle of Amsterdam. So there you go. I think she's excellent. Really, really good. She'd get an A off me, that's for sure. Go and have a watch her videos, because it shows you all the Photoshop stuff she did and all the fakery and how she built her fake hotel and all that kind of stuff. And she really did go to a lot of length to do it. This is NASA astronaut Reid Wiseman. He's been posing great images of the planet since he's been up at the space station for the last few months. And now he's going to post a video. He's posted a video of lightning storms. Now I'm going to put a still up here, and I've got to say, it doesn't do it justice. But this video is quite interesting. It's only a 6-second Vine video, but everyone looks at it and goes, well, wow, that's been sped up. I can't believe, you know, how fast lightning storms go. No, it's not sped up. It is real time. And it is brutally fast. You cannot get over how much a lightning storm across a pocket of the land spreads and goes. There are hundreds of repeats and blows in 6 seconds. It's a really, really good video. If you get a chance to go and look at it, I'm going to stick it in the show notes. The one thing that's good about this show is I actually do show notes, because I have to do all the show notes so that I can actually read the stories out. So a link will be in the show notes under the Snotes tab on British Tech Network, and you can click the link eventually when Paul Wheatley fixes it, because I'm pretty crap at that, and go and have a play. It's an amazing video. You've got to go and watch it. It just ripples like you wouldn't believe, and you swear blind that it's sped up to, like, you know, 2,000% or something. It's not. It's absolutely in real time. Just mind-blowing. Even he says that he was blown away by it. Canon have dropped the price of a pile of lenses. I mean, there are lots and lots and lots and lots of lenses here. The 14mm 2.8 has dropped in price by $100. The 24mm 1.4 has dropped by $100 as well. The savings of up to $1,000 on some of the lenses. If you get right to the top end stuff, I'm just trying to look at the one that's a $1,000 drop. The EF 500mm f4 has gone down from $10,499 to $9,499. Now, all of these lenses have been creeping up in price over the last couple of years, and really to sometimes, I think, quite stupid prices. But this is a clear indication that I don't think Canon are selling the lenses that they think they're selling. I think they've hit a bit of a trouble with them, or maybe they've just outpriced themselves from the market a little bit. But either way, you've got $50 to $100 off very low-end stuff, and you've got up to $1,000 off the higher-end stuff. I think it's normalised the prices quite well, actually. There's $200 drops across a lot of the zoom packages. Three lenses have dropped $1,000. The EF 300mm f2.8, which is an absolutely fantastic lens, that's $700 off. Other stuff, 200mm lenses f2.8 has dropped. It's a fixed lens by $40. $40 from the 135, which is a great lens. I've broken no end of those. Well worth it. And the 50mm 1.28. The 50mm 1.8 hasn't changed, but there you go. There's quite a few lenses and quite a few price drops. And that takes us nicely in to talk about the gear. Well, straight out the blocks, Lexar have released three professional flash upgrades. Chat room saying $10,000 for a lens. That's dedication right there. No, it's a high day rate, mate, because I haven't got one. I've got a high day rate, but I haven't got one of those lenses. Professional workflow line has been added with three micro SDHC cards. You get a reader that will read three cards at once. So that's kind of cool if you're out in the field and you've got GoPros, or you've got anything that, you know, like a quadcopter thing, or my wire cam that I invested in this summer. And you want to see what's on several cards that you've shot, or three cameras that you've got mounted on something. You can look at them all at once if you really want to on your laptop. It's also come out with a 128 gig card. Now, I've been looking at getting one of these cards, and I've got to say, they've been a touch pricey. They're well beyond the £100 mark for the ones that I've been looking at, and you've got to look out for the high rate transfers. This one is extremely good. It's 95 megabytes a second. Megabytes, not megabits. So 95 megabytes a second is a very good fast transfer speed. There's no idea on the price on these things, unfortunately. But if you want the 64 on this one is already available and is far better. And also they've put out a jump drive as well at 64, 32 and 16 gigs, which have got very fast transfer rates as well as. Looks really good. I'd be interested to know the price. The 128s aren't coming in cheap. There's nothing under £100 as far as I've found. But you've also got to watch out. You need to get the SanDisk Ultras, or as it says here with the Lexars, the ones that do 95 gig transfers. But very, very good. Canon have had three of their new lenses leaked out on the market. Three of them, basically. First one is the pancake lens. Here it is, 24mm. It's an EFS connection, though, so it's a connection for the crop sensor stuff, so it's not going to fit all of your other things. It's got basic autofocus and manual focus. I think it goes down to 2.8 from what I remember on the thing. I haven't got it with me. It looks fairly good. No prices for it, obviously, because it's just a leak. But the other one that's out there is the 24 to 105. Now, the 24 to 105 F4 is the one that was bundled with the 6D when that was released. But this one, I don't think it's a replacement. I hope it's not a replacement, because on the Zoom, it's an F3 5 to 5.6. I don't think that the F4 was a higher quality lens and would be more expensive. I would hope this comes in an awful lot cheaper than the sort of £600 or £700 that the F4 version was. I'd like to see this possibly about the £300 to £400 mark if it's going to sell. It's got image stabilization on it though, so that'll help. But I really don't think this is a flat replacement. It looks a cheaper build quality, and it doesn't look as good a quality for images potentially as well. And then the other one is the EF400. Now again, it's an F4, so it's a direct replacement for what was there before, and I think that was going to come out around the £4,000 mark, if I remember rightly, but I haven't got the price up. It looks nice. It's the sexiest of the lenses. It's a big old lens. It's got beautiful glass in it, I'm absolutely sure. When we find out what the prices are, we'll let you know, and we'll see. But I'm not holding my breath on these for cost anyway. They're definitely coming, but I'm not holding my breath on cost. I think certainly if you look at, well, we had the price drop, I suppose, so it could be a little bit better. But I think the one thing that's going to be overpriced, the pancake lens will probably be good. That'll be under £200, I would reckon. The 24 to 105, I'd like to see that hit £300-400. If it does, then great. If it's any more expensive than that, I think they've got a bit of a way to go to kind of justify it. SanDisk have jumped in on the market as well. They've released a new card. This is a standard SD card, 512 gigabytes, so it's huge. I mean, it's great. Now, I mean, SD allegedly in the technology can go up to 2 terabytes, which would be fantastic, but this thing's only going up to 512 at the moment, and as far as I'm aware, this is probably the only one, or one of only a few, that have got that far. I don't think there's anything at 1 terabyte in the SD market, unless I'll be proved wrong. 95 megabytes per second transfer, so it's huge. Really, really good for video, no problem at all. Even 4K video this will work with. Price, however, $800, so that's about £680 to £700 when you do the conversion plus the tax stuff. Interesting to note as well, I did a bit of research on this before I put the story together. 11 years ago, the first SD card was launched in 2003. It was 512 megabytes. And now, 10 years later, 11 years later, you've got 512 gigabytes in an SD card. Superb. Will I be buying one? Not at $800, I'm afraid. That's a bit more than I need. And also, I've still got that thing, you know, I'm carrying 32 gig cards right now, having 3 years ago said, oh, I'd be too wary of a 32 gig card. But there's a certain element of keeping all your data in one place. And people go, oh, well, the cards are really reliable. Yeah, but it's the idiot that's on the end of them that's the problem. And as you saw out this summer with a few of my tweets, I got really lucky when my card went missing, my card wallet went missing on a track where I was working. So, you know, if you've got 1 terabyte in the camera, okay, you're not going to lose the camera. But once you start swapping stuff over, especially if you're shooting 4K video, then you run the risk of losing that. And that's a lot of work gone in one hit. And also, if you get a card failure, then that's an awful lot gone in one hit. Now, the next thing actually quite excited me, I've got to say. I was interested in this. I've got GoPros. Excuse me. I've got GoPros. I use them an awful lot. But I'm always looking at competition because, you know, GoPro's good, but it's a touch expensive for some of the add-ons, and I don't think it always necessarily does the best job. And Ricoh have come out with one. And I've got to say, there's something about this I really like. Now, if you remember the photo show a little while ago, Ricoh came out with those tough cameras. I think they were the WD something or others or something like that. I can't remember the exact numbers. WG. They are superb. And they look great. I've had a little play with one, and it took a great enough image. I can't be complaining about it. But Ricoh has announced the WG M1 action camera. This is quite interesting because actually the screen for it is on the top rather than being on the back. And I've got to say, I struggle a lot when I'm putting up GoPros to see what's on the screen, because if I want to set them low down, I then have to lie on the floor to try and look up. Whereas if I could look on the top, that'd be pretty cool. And also, you know, you'd find other ways of mounting it, so you could put it upside down and then look up to see the screen and see what your view is. It's got a built-in viewing screen, which is fantastic, which of course the GoPro hasn't. In terms of durability, it's waterproof to 10 meters, It's dustproof. It's shockproof, in inverted commas, if it's dropped from a height of up to 2 metres. And it'll work at temperatures down to minus 10 degrees C. That's 14 degrees Fahrenheit. Unlike any other action camera that's out there, though, this thing's already got its protective case built in, so you do not need to start going into buying additional equipment or other cases for it. It shoots 1080 at 30 frames a second, and it's got built-in Wi-Fi. That's the only thing that really bothers me a little bit, is that this thing's only got 30 frames a second. If it had had 60 frames a second, I'd be really, really sent on this. I haven't played with it. I don't know what the autofocus is like. There's a video on there that's been shot by Ricoh, which obviously looks good, and there is no price at this point in time, unless it was on a website that I couldn't find. But it's a nice-looking camera. Great big controls on it. Looks really good, really easy to use. Very simple, record on and off, just like the GoPro. I love the screen on the top. I think that's a real innovation. And it's got a nice petal feature that protects the lens as well, quite well. It takes stills and it takes video, so again, same as the GoPro. Am I going to get one? Well, let's see what the price is like, but I might get one to try, I have to say. Anything cheaper kit for the wannabe hobby photographer. There's tons of free stuff out there, matey. If you go and look at a lot of the lenses, Samsung have got a load of lenses that are all manual focus, but they work cheaply, and you can get a lot of mirror stuff for 500 mirror lenses. They're dirt cheap. They just need an M2 connector, and they're all right. There's nothing, you know, buying cheap lenses is okay, but as long as you're satisfied that what you're buying is a cheap lens. I buy expensive glass because of the fact I've got pro work to do, and people would start getting picking holes in stuff that I provided at certain points if they're going up to specific agencies. There's a lot of really great lenses out there. Not a lot of money. Look on eBay. eBay is definitely your friend. There's tons and tons of good glass on eBay. Just make sure there's pictures on there of the glass that you're buying. Don't look at any reference pictures or stuff that looks like it's been taken by a pro and touched up afterwards. You want a picture on the dining room table, badly lit, but just enough so you can see the top of the lens. And if the lens looks clear, go buy it. Definitely worth it. I've got some lenses that I bought years ago on eBay, and they're all perfectly good. There's nothing wrong with them at all. I've never had a bad lens off eBay yet. What's this? Oh, if you're a Nikon shooter, this is the D750. It's a 24 megapixel camera, full frame sensor. It sits between the D610 and the D810 in the lineup. It offers an improved version of the 51. AF system and a 6.5 frames per second maximum frame rate in burst mode. It's got built-in Wi-Fi and variable angle LCD that tips out from the back. I've got a picture of that. There we go. Which looks nice. I do like those, I have to say. I miss having that on my 6D. I would really find that very useful. And videos... video features are lifted exactly off the 1080. Now, the thing that's nice about this is that it's shooting 1080 at 60 frames a second. And like I said earlier on, that's what I really want now. I don't want 30 frames a second. I want 60 frames a second so that I can slow it down to half speed and get away with it. I'm not looking for massive stuff like the 240. That's nowhere near necessary. Price for this, it's going to be available this month, and it's $2,299.95. So expect to pay in the region of about £1,800 for it. Later in October, with the AFS Nikkor 24-120 f4 lens as a bundled item, but no word on price on that one. But you can get the battery grip that goes with this for an extra $485, which I've got to say, I thought was a bit of a piss take. Battery grips are nothing more than triggers. Okay, there's a bit of tech in them. I don't grant you that there isn't, but they ain't worth $500. Definitely not. If you'd like to go for something a bit better, then there will be something out there. As far as cameras go, I think this looks a very nice camera. It'd be interesting to see what the image quality's like, but Nikon have shot some great stuff, especially in low light just lately. They're probably still just fractionally ahead of Canon in my mark. Double SD cards, that's pretty useful as well, as especially if you're shooting 60 frames a second and high-end things. So I would say well worth a look. If you're a Nikon shooter and you've got all the glass to go with it, I think this isn't a bad choice, really, at sort of £1,800, £1,900. I'd give it a go, that's for sure. They've also released a 20mm f1.8 lens. Now, this is $800, and it's available at the same time. It's the AFS Nikkor 20mm f1.8 ED for FX and DX format Nikon cameras. And it updates the existing AF Nikkor 20mm 2.8, which didn't have an internal focus motor for the entry-level stuff. It's got 13 elements in 11 groups, and it features a nano crystal coat and offers a minimum focal length of 0.2 meters. So 200 millimeters, which is quite far out actually for a 20 mil lens. It looks nice. Whether it's $800 worth, I don't know. The build quality looks okay. It's right there with that Canon, the Canon build quality, I would have said, of the last one that we looked at. But Nikkor lens is a good glass. There's nothing to complain about in any of them. So if you're thinking about getting this or thinking about getting the D750, you'd be a good buy if you're a Nikon shooter. If I was a Nikon shooter, I'd certainly be thinking about it, that's for sure. Now, my views on the Fujitsu stuff, Fujifilm stuff rather, is well known. This is the X100T. Now, this has been out for a couple of weeks, but there's a lot of reviews creeping forwards in it now. It follows on from a long history of X100s that have come out from Fujifilm. High quality cameras, high price as well, and external viewfinders and things like that on them if you really want them. I've had a go with one of the original X100s, and I've got to say, it takes a lovely photo. It really does. I can't fault it. But whether it's the price tag that they're talking for, I don't know. This is $1,000. There's changes to the full electronic sensor and shutter. Sorry, there's changes to the electronic viewfinder. You can go into optical viewfinder mode, which has got in it as well, but there is an electronic viewfinder mode that goes on there, and that will sap your battery a little bit better. Unfortunately, this uses the standard battery that you got with the original X100s. So it's the MP95 battery. You're only going to get in the region of about 300 shots out of a single charge with that before you need to start to replace it. So you're carrying around multiple batteries potentially to start off with if you want a day's shooting. It does charge via a USB socket, however, so it's got a built-in charger. But you've also got an external charger which comes with it that you haven't got to pay extra for, which is nice. A little additional grip there on the front. It shoots 1080p at 60 frames, 50 frames a second, 30 frames a second, 25 frames a second. It's a 16 megapixel CMOS sensor with on-sensor phase detection elements, as well as 35mm equivalent f2 lens, and a 3-inch screen on the back. Macro shooting down to 3.9 inches, and it's got built-in Wi-Fi and a remote control function as well as. Pictures of it. It's got that old stereotypical 1970s camera like my dad would have had. His old Kodak looked like this, but a little bit bigger. I like the look of them. They look fine. Don't get me wrong. They take great pictures. I'm not going to slag them off. But this thing's coming in at £1,000, not dollars. This is £1,000. So you're talking $1,300 for this thing. It's a great camera. It's fantastic. Well done. Is it $1,300 worth, £1,000 worth? That's where I really fall down with these things. And this is where I fall down with Leica. Leica take great pictures, don't get me wrong. But you go and find these things and you look at what's taken the studio shots, and it's Hasselblads, it's Minoltas, it's Canons, it's Nikons. It's not these items. And that's the beauty that Apple have realised. If you want to sell a camera, you've got to show product shots that are taken with that camera. Otherwise, people are just going to lose credibility with it. And I'm sorry, but Leica and Fujitsu, Fujifilm, don't seem to have that under control. £1,000 is not enough bang for the buck, I have to say. Where are we? That's it. That's all the news. Bloody hell, I went through that fast. Right then, it's time for your questions. First question. This question is from Mark. Greetings. I was wondering if you could help me with a problem. I recently started to shoot some photos at night but found that the rear LCD viewing screen kept lighting up and screwing around with my eyes. I know I can turn it off as well as the picture review after the fact as well. I've got a Nikon D3100. When I use my telescope, I use a red light lens on my flashlight so that I can look at the star chart and write in my journal without my eyes adjusting back from night vision. Is there a screen I can use to put out the rear LCD of my camera to the same effect so that I can make adjustments for my shots? Filters and gels are your friend there, Mark. If you look at, I mean, even sweet wrappers. You take those like Quality Street street wrappers and you pull them off, and they've got like green cellophane, red cellophane, that kind of thing. Put them over the top of your flash and you've got an instant coloured flash. With same thing with these, just tape them over the front, flatten them out a little bit, or go and buy some clear gels or some coloured gels from someone that's a photo supply firm or something like that nearby, or have a look online at Amazon. There'll be something in there. And just get a red clear gel that you can put on. I've got some double-sided magnetic tape, so you can just put a little tiny thin strip on around, and then you can snap gels on the front. I use it to hold on my viewfinder. It doesn't do anything to the magnetic stuff on the inside of the camera. It's absolute rubbish. But a red gel or something like that, you're not looking for, you know, you're not going to check your auto white balance with every single shot, are you, or anything like that. So what you want to do here is just put a gel over the top, just accept that you've captured something, or turn it off. I mean, there's probably a bit of a safety net in what you're saying, Mark, about checking your image, unless it's just for the framing. Framing you could do with a gel on dead easy. So have a look. I wouldn't go too far with that, though. Just keep it nice and simple and cheap. Next question is from Tim. I missed the photo show. When's it coming back? Ta-da, Tim. I appreciate how busy you are, but I love all the other shows. Would love to see this one back. On the question, I've got both Aperture and Lightroom, but I'm rubbish with both. What I always seem to be looking for is an artificial ND graduated filter so I can improve my skies but keep clarity in the bottom half of the picture. Seems a bit of a straightforward tool, but I can't find it in either. Any ideas other than buy an ND grad filter and take proper photos? Well, I'm sorry, mate, but there's a certain element of, you know, not shooting for the darkroom, if you like, with this. If you're going to fix it in post, then don't complain if you can't fix it in post sometimes, because that happens. And I do that as well. You know, I'm out on site and I'm thinking, right, I want to take this picture. And lo and behold, I get back and I can't correct it. Really, you're trying to find that your sky balance issues tend to come when you're shooting into the sun. So shooting away from the sun, you'll find it far easier to get a decent balance between light and shade of the sky and the ground. Best bet, buy a neutral density filter. But if you're failing that, there are filter add-ons in Photoshop which are easy enough to use, and they don't do a bad job. If you're going to start cutting out skies and backgrounds and foregrounds, then that's okay, and that works where you're shooting a set of hills where you've got a very hard edge or line around them, and you can trim those back dead easily and change the sky individually. Failing that, shoot some HDR so you've got three exposures, or do some bracketed exposure yourself and try and merge the images together, and then use like a feathered tool to try and wipe away some of the stuff that's between the two borders. I tend to let myself just have a white sky, and then I'll just put a tiny blue gradient in there that I adjust the opacity for. And you don't actually need to bring that gradient all the way down to create an impression of a changing colour in the sky. It looks far better just to have some kind of interest so it burns some of the white out. As I've always said, you know, white whites look worse than black blacks. So if you're in doubt, always go for an underexposure. But I'd take a couple of exposures and see how you can mesh them together in Photoshop. As for the benefits of Aperture and Lightroom are basically doing core corrections of levels, and that's it. They're not going to get into layer amendments or that type of stuff. So you've got the wrong tool for the job there, mate. If you want to start doing something where you can apply After Effects for neutral density, you're going to need to upgrade to Photoshop. You're only talking £8 a month, though, at the moment. £8.79, I think it is. And I've got to say, at that price, even I've gone, oh, bugger it, I'll have it. So I bought it. But either buy a neutral density filter or buy Photoshop, but you're not going to do it with Aperture and Lightroom. Wrong tools for the job there. What's happening here? Storage of images. This is from Mark. Amateur photographer who used a 27-inch iMac and Aperture. I'm looking for a storage solution for all the pics I have and will soon have. I'd like to get a multi-disc drive system with redundant drives. I don't want to access it from the Wi-Fi. I've two free Thunderbolt ports for a fast connection if possible. And I have a FireWire port and a few USB ports as well. Have you got any suggestions? Well, my preferred option at the moment, and I've gone through an awful lot of different types of storage, but my preferred option at the moment is the MyBooks. I've got four 3 terabyte MyBooks down here that are on FireWire that are all daisy chained and then linked into my Mac Pro. And on this side underneath this desk that's where I'm sitting, I have an 8 terabyte Thunderbolt MyBook, a 6 terabyte Thunderbolt MyBook, and another 8 terabyte Thunderbolt, my book. So the 2.8 terabytes mirror each other and their backups, and the 6 one gets backed up to one of the 8 terabytes, and then that in its own time mirrors using ChronoSync. I'm fanatical about storage. The 6 travels around with me. I have got one of these 3 terabytes with enough stuff on. I don't have to worry about losing anything up at my parents' house, which isn't a million miles from here. But I think I'm going to get to the stage now of getting another 8 terabyte Thunderbolt with the amount of video I've got and storing that up there on a periodic basis. Other options are available. Other storage devices are available. But I've got to say, I don't have any problem. People slag Western Digital off, but I don't install any of their software. I format the drive so that they're how I want them in OS X, and then I've put stuff on them, and I've sent one back because it was clicking at the start when I got it, and I just thought, well, I don't need to take the risk. But the rest, all fine. I don't have any trouble with them at all. There are tons of drives out there you can buy. It depends how much you're going to store, but I mean, you can pick up a 1 terabyte drive for about 35, 40 quid now. So if you've got FireWire, daisy chain them, and then you can bounce between them dead easily. Ewan, that's from Jim. What are you doing about the Flickr site? It seems to there's not a lot been happening. And you did mention a while that you're going to talk about putting up a new Flickr site. All you're going to send me into regarding the photo show, but I know you've been very busy of late. We haven't got. We had a Flickr site that we when it was the photo show that as in the Bagel Tech photo show, and we used to set monthly assignments. Now we did have a Google Plus community. But that's long and short, I'm not in control of that. Someone else is who shall remain nameless. I think we need to start some up again and do a monthly assignment. That was pretty cool. So let me have a think about how we're going to do that. But I think what we're going to do is set up a photo show, and if we have a monthly assignment, you can showcase your work. And during the show, we'll actually specify what this month's assignment's about. Okay, so black and whites or speed or animals or things in reverse, anything. Let me have a think about that. I think we'll probably go for a Flickr group in the end, but I'll probably still take part. Also, there's a photo walk tomorrow if anyone wants to do it in London, which I'm going to. So I hope. We shall see. Next one. I want to upgrade my camera. This is from Andy. Looking to upgrade my DSLR. What's your view on full frame versus cropped? Just seen the Nikon D750 announced today. Also, will lenses be more expensive with full frame? I won't be able to listen live, but I'll pick it up on the podcast. I couldn't give a stuff about full frame versus cropped. I really couldn't. I mean, the whole principle of photography is to fill the frame with interest. Okay, if you've got a crop sensor, the things you've got there is that actually that's probably an awful lot smaller than a full frame sensor. So in terms of that, your pixel size is going to be smaller. And with reduced pixel size, you're going to lose some quality. But I tossed a little D100D to me son for a... we went to a family wedding a few weeks ago, and I took a few pictures. And he said, Dad, I want to take some pictures. Okay, here you go. There's the 100D. It's 70% smaller. It's a crop-sensored camera. I just stuck a lens on it that would be fine for him and said, off you go. Just went off with the f1.8 50mm. And at one point, he even started shoving on me 3 grand lenses. To have a play with it, and he loved it. It was great, and the picture quality of the stuff that came back, if it's shot in good light, you haven't got a lot to worry about. It's when you get to low light that you're starting to lose an awful lot of stuff. I wouldn't, especially if you're an amateur, I wouldn't start thinking about losing any sleep over full frame or crop. The D750 looked a fantastic camera. I mean, I'd say if I was a Nikon shooter, I'd be sitting thinking about having a go at buying one, especially with 60 frames a second, but I'm not. I'm stuck in Canon, so I'm kind of waiting for them to catch up yet again, which I wasn't a few years ago. So don't lose sleep over it. Get what you want to get. Get what's within your budget. Get something that you think will do you for the future. You can't take cropped frame lenses and put them on, but you can take any full frame lenses and put them back to crop. So that's the only difference. So I'd leave it alone. Don't worry, Andy. Just get what you can afford and what looks like it takes the best picture. Converting video files. Are you? And thanks for doing a photo show again. It's been a sorely missed element of BTN. You're welcome, Anders. I've got a Panasonic HV V720 video camera, a great bit of kit with one flaw. It's the file format. It saves the video files within a Blu-ray disc. BDMV structure. This is fantastic if I want to burn the SD contents to a Blu-ray disc or plug the camera directly into the TV and watch it via the HDMI cable. However, I don't want to do either of these things because it's a pain in the arse. Can you recommend a workflow for extracting, possibly transcoding if necessary, the video file formats along with metadata and placing in more usable file format? I've only got a Mac or iOS devices at home, but I prefer I would prefer to come up with something, even maybe pay for it, rather than having to watch all our videos through XBMC. I've had a hunt around, Anders. Now, I'm pretty sure that VLC will play BDMV files natively. So that might be your option. And whether it does a save as or not, I doubt, because I don't think it's going to transcode them. There's some free transcoders that are available in the Mac App Store that may do it, but one that definitely does is bdmvplayer.com. If you go to bdmvplayer.com/BDMVTOMKV, then you've got a player that will go to MP4 and it'll go to MKV. And then once it's in MKV, anything will change it into MP4 for you. And it's not copies of copies, don't worry, you're not losing any digital quality. So give that a go. BDMVplayer.com. I'll put that in the show notes and you can have a play with it. But there you go. Hope that helped. And we've had one more via email, which was pretty good. And I've lost it now because it's. From Mark. Mark says, yet to see a photo show, so a question that you may have answered sometimes in the past. Is the built-in Mavericks photo app good enough to touch up, edit photos for the average punter like myself? Would you recommend anything else if the price is right? What time were you thinking of starting the show? Well, it's that was a bit fluctuated, mate, but it was 1:30-ish. Yeah, I mean, the photo app is great if you want to do basic edits and just, you know, boost your levels, maybe add a little bit of sharpening or something like that, or find some edges, get a bit of red eye out of the way. Perfectly good. Nothing wrong with it at all. I wouldn't get upset with it. Things like preview as well, though. If you've got preview on your Mac, which you will have, that'll do basic photo touching and editing. There's tons of stuff. My talk at Macworld this year was about what the core apps can do. So no iPhoto, no Aperture, no additional program, just the basic, very, very basic applications that came with OS X, what they could do with the photographer. And there's tons that they can do for it. Mostly is file storage is the beneficial, and finding your stuff, which, you know, replaces Aperture. I've never used Aperture on a professional level or Lightroom because I don't like the way that it makes me lose control of the package contents. You know, show package contents is a real fear for me. So I like stuff stored in files, in folders, in a file tree, and there's an awful lot of stuff you can do with smart folders in Finder and Automator to find all the stuff that you've shot and do workflows that will output to great effect, touch sheet, contact sheets, that kind of stuff. The new photo app is going to be even better, I think, but even iPhoto for basic levels of stuff will do pretty well. Don't worry about it. And that was the questions and answers. If you've got a question for us, then go to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com and send it to us on an email. There you go. Mark it photo show and stick a question on it, and that's great. If you'd like to donate to us, then donate to us at patreon.com/britishtechnetwork. So that's patreon.com/britishtechnetwork, and you can give us as little as $1 a month. And if you think this show's worth $1 a month, then stick it in, and we'll put it towards a good cause. If everyone who listened to the big show gave us $1 a month, there'd be a photo show every week, because I'd be getting paid professionally to do this. I mean, that's what it's like. We've got that many listeners to Big and Mac that if every one of those listeners gave us just $1 a month, not a show, a month, then we could all do this professionally, and all of these shows would be out there on a regular basis, weekly, absolutely week in, week out. Work wouldn't interfere because this would be our work. That's all it takes. So if you can give us $5, brilliant, you're making it for 4 people that are tight arses. That's the way you've got to view it. Thanks to UK2, thanks to the Network Union because they support us as well. Please support them and go and click the links that are on the sponsors page. We'll be back again next month. Because it's definitely going to be next month, because it's the middle of this month already. But even if it's 2 weeks' time, I'm going to do my very best to keep this at least at monthly, and hopefully it'll be fortnightly. Send us your stuff through, and it's been great. I've got to say, I've really enjoyed doing it again. I've missed it terribly myself as well as. Send your questions in. Send your donations in. I'll do this more often. See you next week. Ish. Thanks for listening.